Welcome to the Left of Lansing podcast with your host, Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. A, dare we say, entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how we can best make Michigan's political machine work for the people. And now, live from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's Pat Johnston.
Yeah! Welcome to another, albeit late, edition of the Left of Lansing podcast, advocating progressivism with passion, highlighting those who are fighting the true progressive fight here in the state of Michigan, honoring those who are fighting to set Michigan as the prime example for the rest of the nation on how to not only fight for political change, but to enact political change. And in order for progressives to get the wheels of justice churning to begin that change contains one major qualification: courage. I'm Pat Johnston, recording from high atop his attic in beautiful mid-Michigan. Please follow Left of Lansing on Twitter. That's at Left of Lansing, again, at Left of Lansing. Plus, I'm on the Facebook as well. And yes, visit my blog, which is leftoflansing.com. I know, I didn't do a whole lot of work on the site this past week, and there's a good reason for that. I had my annual physical earlier this week. Well, it was an annual physical a few years kind of late, I admit. But I got through it with a clean bill of health. My doctor informed me that I was overdue, however, on my tetanus shot. And he wondered if I'd like to have it done that day. And I thought, well, you know, while I'm here, why not? Give me a shot, doc. And they did. And the next morning, I felt like I'd gone through opening day of Mark D'Antonio or Jim Harbaugh's training camp. I was beat up. I was fatigued. My joints ached. My fingers ached. My fingers don't ache, at least, you know, not yet. I was not a pretty sight. Then I lost my appetite. Then I had trouble focusing, and I knew, oh no, this is not good. Not good at all. I ended up having to miss work the next day and was unable to get out of bed, which meant I was unable to get this week's podcast finished by Thursday evening. The nurse from my doctor's office informed me, by the way, that the symptoms I was experiencing were quite consistent with the side effects from the booster shot. Oh, lovely. Only me. That was the sickest I had felt in a few years. I went to the doctor's office and then got sick. But my wife and Left of Lansing technical advisor, Dr. Heather, did some reading and said that I'd rather go through what I just went through for a couple of days rather than actually getting infected with tetanus. So I guess she could be right there. No, well, I'm on the mend and ready to finally unveil this week's podcast. Coming up in a few moments, the youngest state senator in Michigan is joining me. She's a millennial who decided it was time that her generation had some real representation in government. And she ran on a strong progressive platform. She's also been featured here on a recent episode, but this time she'll be talking with me right here on the podcast. Her name, of course, is State Senator Mallory McMorrow from Royal Oak, and she's my guest here in just a few moments. You know, I've always heard many wax philosophical about the golden age of bipartisanship. I've heard how we've longed for the days of when both sides of the political aisle worked together to solve problems. Now, I've never completely understood where that myth comes from, because it never really truly happened all that often. The last time we had real progressive change happen in Washington, D.C., for example, is when President Obama had majorities in the House and Senate for the first 2 years. And even then, the best health care bill he could pass was a Republican bill that they had been advocating for years. Now, don't get me wrong. There was a lot about Obamacare that did a lot of good, and that doesn't happen without a Democratic majority. But despite having that strong majority, Republicans were able to block even a public option thanks to the help of former Republican Senator Joe Lieberman. All right, yes, I know Joe Lieberman was billed as a Democrat, but he was bought off by the insurance companies. He made his donors and his fellow Republicans very happy by voting down the public option, which really would have made a big difference in our healthcare system. But go back to the 1960s and LBJ's Great Society. It took a strong Democratic majority in Congress to pass those initiatives, not to mention also the Voting Rights Act. Many of those initiatives now that conservatives have been slowly tearing down brick by brick ever since. In fact, it's become my understanding, especially according to the national media, that bipartisanship really, really meant that Democrats must work with Republicans to pass Republican initiatives. That was bipartisanship. To the establishment in the media and parts of the Democratic Party, bipartisanship meant passing bills to enrich the rich at the expense of the rest of us. Democrats were supposed to act as the good little boys and girls who didn't upset the apple cart too much while agreeing to do what Republicans wanted. I feel like ever since the Donald Trump presidency began in 2017, though, that many Democrats, especially progressive Democrats, finally woke up to the realization that everything they had worked for, that everything they had fought for decades, was about to be trashed. Why? Because while Democrats played nice, Republicans spent decades playing a different sort of political game. They didn't care about playing nice. They cared only about winning and passing policies that benefited the top 1% donor base. That's always been their game. In fact, they even nuzzled close to the religious right so they could rely on securing that voting bloc in order to pass their true initiatives to advance corporate interests here and around the world. Now, Democrats finally woke up that they'd been late to this game and that they were losing big. So progressives ran for state legislature seats, congressional seats, Senate seats, judicial seats, and city and county commission seats in 2018 throughout the country, and they won. They did it by running to the left of Donald Trump, to the left of the Republican Party. I know, what an insane approach. Here in Michigan, progressive women won statewide races and state legislative races, and progressive initiatives were approved by voters by huge margins. Progressives put up a fight and made a stand right here in Michigan. The only reason they couldn't take over the state legislature was because of gross gerrymandering by Republicans. Remember, they learned not to play nice while in power. Thankfully, one of those progressive initiatives that passed was an initiative to take back the power to set congressional districts out of the politicians' hands and into a more independent body that will change the game, certainly starting in 2022. But we at least have Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer in office, and she stood strong for progressive values at times, like promising to veto any legislation that chips away at a woman's right to choose. But even there, Republicans are finding ways around her veto to enact strict, draconian anti-choice laws in Michigan. The Republican leadership has even called Whitmer's gas tax proposal to help increase road repair funding dead on arrival. Hey, don't forget, they tried to pass laws during the lame duck session last year to prevent her and Democratic Attorney General Dana Nessel from doing their jobs. Again, Republicans don't play nice. Yet knowing all of this, watching and suffering as millions of Michiganders have done during these years of Republican rule, do you think we would have learned our lesson? Look, I'm going to call them as I see them at times here on the podcast. I'm not going to ignore disagreements with my side of the aisle because the point of this podcast is to give my take on the political and social news as I see it. I'm not going to be a political hack. It's not in my DNA. Because when I saw Governor Whitmer, the Democratic leadership, along with the Republican leadership, who of course run the state legislature, all get together for that auto insurance reform bill signing ceremony photo op on Mackinac Island this week, I thought, this is not why people came out in droves in 2018. It is not. Republicans were unable to get their version of auto insurance reform passed while Republican Rick Snyder was in office, so they made it a priority to get it done with Democrat Gretchen Whitmer. Now, it's true that Michigan has the highest auto insurance rates in the nation, but that's partially because we have unlimited lifetime medical benefits if you or others get injured in an accident. Sure, no one is saying that changes weren't needed to help average Michiganders. Sure, we could have looked at and examined how best to lower insurance rates while keeping people properly insured. But instead, Whitmer and the Republican leadership of Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirkey and House Speaker Lee Chatfield agreed to a final bill behind closed doors just before recessing for the Memorial Day weekend holiday. And once they agreed to a final bill late in the night, Shirkey and Chatfield made sure those bills were voted on later that day. The bill is 120 pages long with lots of legalese language. There's no way every legislator had a chance to read what was in it. Yet the bill passed with strong bipartisan support, a catchphrase that the establishment media loved to celebrate. And the bill passed with virtually everything Republicans ever wanted. The quote-unquote reform bill allowed drivers to opt out of purchasing the mandatory personal injury protection. Now drivers can choose from 5 different options that won't cost you as much. Sounds great, right? So you could still spend your money to keep the unlimited PIP coverage, or you could choose plans where insurance companies will cover up to $500,000, they'll cover up to $250,000, or insurance companies will cover up to $50,000, the lowest price option available to people on Medicaid. Or, you know, you could also opt out of PIP coverage entirely if you have separate health insurance that covers collision injuries. Now, everybody seems to be thinking, that's just awesome. And hey, the UAW thought so, as they helped give Whitmer the necessary cover to pay for such a bill. You know, look, I'll always support my union brothers and sisters. You know that. But I will call them out when I think they're wrong. Here's more. The bill also guarantees lower rates for these plans for 8 years. Okay, but here's the catch. As less and less people choose the full PIP coverage plan, that plan will continue to skyrocket. That means thousands and thousands of Michigan drivers are playing Russian roulette when they hit the roadways, banking that they won't get into a serious accident. Think about it. How far do you think a $50,000 policy will go if you've gotten into a serious accident, or if a passenger gets more injured than the driver? Man, come on, people. This was a boon for the insurance industry, and they're loving it. Because it's cost shifting from them to the individual, or it's shifting costs to Medicare and Medicaid. And before you say, well, Pat, I mean, that can't be all that bad, right? I mean, my insurance company or my Medicaid or Medicare will simply cover what unlimited PIP covered, right? Well, as registered nurse and patients' rights advocate and former progressive state House candidate Julie Pulver explained in a remarkable piece that I urge you to read, that's not the case. Pulver points out, PIP benefits are more than just your regular medical insurance benefits. Medical coverage is only a portion of what is covered under your PIP benefits. PIP stands for Personal Injury Protection and covers a wide variety of recovery service and benefits, not just traditional medical care. It covers vastly more than MRIs, hospital, and surgery costs. It covers so much more than prescription medications, casts, and doctor's appointments. In our currently broken medical system, it was the only remaining truly patient-focused system that we left, and now it's gone. Wow. Allow me to read another part from Julie Pulver's piece. She provided a huge list that PIP benefits covered, which Medicare and Medicaid don't cover. Here's one. She says, it pays for a health home aide who can help you with your activities of daily living, bathing, dressing, making sure that you don't fall and get re-injured, making sure that you can get out of your house quickly if there's an emergency so you're not trapped while you physically recover from a catastrophic injury in the comfort of your own home, the safest, most cost-effective place to recover. Your medical insurance does not cover that. Medicare does not cover that. Medicaid does not cover that. She also says that it pays for intensive therapies for children to not only physically recover, but maintain their cognitive and physical abilities into adulthood. Outside of the no-fault system, children in need of these kinds of long-term intensive therapies are denied under their medical insurance and are told that those therapies are the responsibility of the school systems. Your medical insurance does not cover that. Medicaid does not cover that. Medicare does not cover that. Don't you see what happened here? Powerful interests got what they wanted. By the way, I have posted Julie Pulver's writing on this whole subject on leftoflansing.com. I mean, this was just a way for political leadership to save face and say, hey, look, everybody, we got something done. Isn't that wonderful? Is it? Really? Is it? It seems to me they really freaked out when a billionaire Detroiter threatened to put a proposal on the ballot for auto insurance reform. And don't get me wrong. Dan Gilbert's plan was never to help average Michiganders. But they moved, and they moved quickly behind closed doors. And they rushed through a bill that is going to hurt Michiganders and end up not saving that much money in the end. For example, Democrats wanted the bill to end the practice of allowing insurance companies to use zip codes as a way to set rates. That was a great idea. Detroiters say that they have been charged unfairly, which they are. And the bill did end that practice, but there's more to the story. The bill added another little goodie. It allows insurance companies now to allow rates to be determined by territory. What the hell is a territory? Are you telling me the state legislature knew about that fact before signing off on this crap bill? Here's the other thing. The bill passed without getting any kind of analysis from both House and Senate fiscal agencies. Wow. That's not good government. This turned out to be a lame duck style kind of bill when we're not even in lame duck session. It's this kind of backdoor secret meetings that led people to come out in droves against the Republican establishment in 2018. It's why young people came out in force. They were tired of these kinds of bills that are passed in bipartisan fashion that don't really end up benefiting us. I will never advocate for passing bills in a bipartisan fashion to get something done for something's sake. Getting something done to say you got something done is not smart policy. If that's bipartisanship, then I say no to bipartisanship. That is not the change we wanted. There were 19. My dog Hines, by the way, you can hear him. He agrees. There were 19 Democrats in the state legislature who voted against the auto insurance reform bill. One of them was State Senator Mallory McMorrow, and she's about to join me here in a second. Thanks for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. Please, please, please subscribe if you haven't done so yet.
Thanks for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. Don't forget, you can contact Pat by emailing leftoflansing@gmail.com and visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information.
Don't forget, you can reach me on Twitter. That's @LeftOfLansing again, @LeftOfLansing. And I am also available on the Facebook page as well. All right, now I'm going to be honest. I've been looking forward to speaking with this week's guest ever since the run-up of last year's election. She was part of the blue tsunami that progressive Democrats here in Michigan enjoyed last November. She ousted incumbent Republican State Senator Marty Nolenberg in the 13th District, a major, major victory for Democrats in the ever-changing Oakland County. Now, before she did get involved in politics, she worked on product design as well as in the media and advertising field. So she does bring some much-needed problem-solving experience to Lansing. But even more than that, she's a millennial and brings that generation's struggles and experience to the state legislature as well. Of course, I'm talking about State Senator Mallory McMorrow, and she's my guest this week on the Left of Lansing podcast. Senator McMorrow, thanks again for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Senator, being a millennial, what made you put down the avocado toast and your Candy Crush and decide to get into the political game? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I say that because in case my listeners aren't aware, you lit up, and I really mean that. You lit up conservative Gen Xer and New York Times columnist Brett Stevens recently. He wrote a column where he cried and complained about you millennials, and he used those stereotypical tropes about how you are lazy and entitled. But, Senator, you did deliver a Twitter storm rebuttal to Stevens, and it was beautiful. So first, let me thank you and also apologize that my Generation X has guys like that in my demographic. I'm very sorry about that.
Oh, my husband is a Gen Xer, so completely get it. It was, you know, not something I anticipated, but so I am the youngest person serving in the Senate. I believe one of the youngest women ever elected to the Michigan Senate. One of the journalists earlier this year told me I was the youngest, but I don't have that fact checked. So I am for sure one of the youngest. And I think that for a lot of millennials, what I believe in is we have to get past judging each other based on our age.
Yes.
I will be 33 coming up here in just a couple of months. So, you know, I'm not fresh out of school. I've got a decade under my belt in terms of my career, but a lot of millennials graduated college right into the recession and took on tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt. And trying to connect the dots to say that, you know, if we don't have the ability to participate in the economy the same way our parents did, if we can't buy houses, if we're not having kids, if we're not buying cars, then our future looks really bleak. All of the millennials I know are scrappy and passionate. And, you know, I know the column in the New York Times was really demonizing the millennial call out culture, if you will. But, you know, I think we call it out because it hasn't changed. It hasn't changed in decades. And we are now set up where our generation is facing head on the effects of climate change, social safety nets that will no longer exist, and the fact that we are still a decade later just trying to catch up.
Yeah, Senator, why is it that certain politicians, and I think it sometimes can go on both sides of the aisle, and also political pundits, and like I said, even some of these columnists out there, that they really do refuse to comprehend why millennials are passionate about their politics? I mean, due to suffocating, let's say, high student debt or flat wages and climate change, why do you think there is that disconnect with maybe an older generation, maybe baby boomers and millennials?
Well, I think there's a real shift in communication. I'm actually fairly unique in that my career started because of Facebook. I won a car design competition that was hosted with Mazda and Facebook in 2007. And we are a generation that has access to this tool that lets us express ourselves, you know, in real time. And many of us have been on these platforms for many, many years now. And I think that there is just a real shift in communication methods. Mm. And I don't necessarily know that, you know, my parents always understand why I comment so frequently, why we have to have kind of this in real time conversation. And we see that generational shift. And I think that people mistake that for complaining and whining, and it's calling out things as we see it with the idea that it's going to change, because leaving the system to its own devices, things haven't changed. And you have to look no further than, you know, the kids out of Parkland who took it upon themselves to not let this issue go. And we're finally starting to see a shift in terms of gun violence legislation. And it's in no small part due to what they've been doing on social media.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I would say the Parkland kids, they took a page out of Martin Luther King's book, I think, in which you fight for what you believe in, but you also make the other side feel uncomfortable. And, you know, you got to speak the truth. And that's one thing I liked about them. We're talking with Democratic State Senator Mallory McMorrow here on the Left of Lansing podcast. Senator, what made you decide to run? What was it that you just got fed up yourself and said, you know what, instead of sitting on the sidelines, I'm going to get in the game?
Yeah. And this is something that I think that, like so many people who ran in 2018, I never thought that I would do this. My background is in industrial design. I'm a creative professional. I love making things. My husband and I moved back to Michigan. My career had taken me all around the country. So I grew up in New Jersey. I went to school in Indiana. I worked out in LA and New York and LA and back to Michigan again. And it was a real culture shock when we came back. I mean, I always looked at Michigan as a place that has the ability to change the world, especially as somebody who is an industrial designer. This is where we invented the auto industry. This is where Ray and Charles Eames met and fell in love in my district and went on to go change industrial design and architecture forever. Seeing what happened even before 2015 leading into 2016, where the rhetoric just got so nasty. And I think that Michigan is a perfect microcosm of what was happening in the rest of the country, where there was this tension of, do we hold on to a time that's in the past and demonize our neighbors in the process, or do we figure out how we move forward together? And my town came apart. So the breaking point for me, I live in Royal Oak, and there were neighbors living down the street from me who, they have two middle school age daughters, and I would see them outside playing every day and coming home from soccer practice. And 2 days after the Access Hollywood tapes leaked, where our now president said that he could grab women by the pussy, this family took down their American flag and put up a Trump flag. And it was just such a punch to the gut to me of, how do you talk to your daughters about this behavior being acceptable? So I didn't know that I was going to be running then. I just decided I needed to get involved. I went to the Women's March in Detroit. I started hosting postcard writing parties and phone banking parties and calling all of my elected officials. And I went through a training program called Emerge Michigan, which recruits and trains Democratic women to run for office, thinking I would help out on a campaign. But then as I got to know all of my elected officials, I really saw a need in this specific seat on issues that, you know, at the state level, these are the issues that affect our everyday lives. So I threw my name in a year and a half before Election Day, and there it was.
The rest is history. That's right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here's what kind of drives me pretty mad at times, Senator, is that, I mean, we just had this election, women winning a bunch of state legislature races. Of course, obviously, we had the governor, Governor Whitmer winning, and we had Dana Nessel winning the attorney general's race, and on and on and on. I always thought, okay, you know what, maybe this will be a wake-up call to the Michigan GOP to say, you know what, maybe it's time to turn the page, like you said, from the past, and let's try to reach out to the next generations here, because we need them. We need them to stay here in Michigan to make Michigan a thriving state in the future. But instead, they decided to jump aboard this anti-choice and anti-women's health agenda. Did that surprise you at all?
It does surprise me, and it's terrifying. It's terrifying to watch these bills make their way around the country. And in a time when particularly in these swing districts and in suburban Michigan, where we saw so many district splits, where the rallying cry from all of our residents is, we just want to be able to work together again. And I think people across the board are just fed up with the rhetoric and the divisiveness that this is what we're going to push right now. And I will say this with a full caveat. I was raised Catholic. I went to Notre Dame. I understand how passionately people feel about this issue, but you know, religion has no place in our politics, and it is just demonizing women and slowly chipping away at our rights and our ability to make our own choices about our bodies.
I'm not off the mark here, am I, when I say, I mean, when we're trying to find people to relocate to Michigan, for instance, we're trying to keep younger generations here in Michigan instead of going off somewhere else, that bills like this are counterintuitive?
I think it really is, and that's one of the things that I try to be very vocal about in Lansing, particularly as the youngest member. I feel like it's my responsibility to speak up and say there are studies and trends and surveys out there that say millennials and Gen X are relocating to places that are more welcoming and open-minded. There was a presentation that we saw. I serve on the Senate Economic Development and Small Business Committee, where we saw a map of outbound migration, where people are going. And it's to places like Austin and Seattle and Southern California and New York. And these are not places that are cheaper to live by any stretch of the imagination. No. And our talented younger people are choosing to take on a significantly more expensive lifestyle because they don't want to be in a place that's viewed as unwelcoming. So I try to reframe a lot of these issues to really point at the economic impact of what's going to happen if we keep losing residents to places that are considered more welcoming.
Yeah, that's right. We're talking with State Senator Mallory McMorrow here on the Left of Lansing podcast. Well, Senator, you introduced legislation that would ban gay conversion therapy. Why did you feel like this was an issue that we must tackle at this moment?
I mean, I think this is an issue that the more you learn about it, the reaction that I get from a lot of residents, even after introducing the bill, was, I can't believe this is a thing that exists.
Yeah.
Unless you have friends or family members who are gay, it might not be something that you think about or realize. But, you know, again, this is something that is going to drive people away. And there are already 16 states around the country that have banned this practice, who are headed up by both Republican and Democratic governors, because it's a practice that is unnecessarily cruel and has no grounding in science. So it is a practice that purports to be able to change somebody from gay to straight. And we know that there is no scientific basis for that. You know, I'm a huge proponent of mental health support. I know that trying to find your identity is a time that is hard enough as it is. We should have therapists available who are going to help you navigate your own feelings, but not tell you that who you are at your core is wrong. It leads young people. So my bill would specifically ban this practice on minors. And minors who go through conversion therapy are three times as likely as their other LGBT counterparts to attempt suicide. So it's just for protection of minors, whether it's Michiganders or sending the message to the rest of the country that this is a place where you are welcome and that we will protect you.
All right. Well, since I've got you here for a few more minutes, Senator, can we talk about the auto insurance, quote unquote, reform bill? Can I just bring something up there? All right. Because you were one of the four Senate Democrats who voted against the bill. I was wondering if you could explain what you felt was lacking in this bill that made you vote against it.
Sure. This is a bill that claims that it's going to lower auto insurance rates by shifting to a PIP choice system, which a number of other states have. I also serve on the Insurance and Banking Committee. So I've been working on this for the past 5 months. And I've been a bit of a broken record in the committee trying to ask and understand from people who have come to give presentations of various interest groups, what is the cost shift going to be to our healthcare?
Right.
The costs just aren't going to go away. If you get into a catastrophic car accident, you're going to need care. You're going to need to go to a trauma center. You're going to need rehabilitative care. Many of our health insurance plans don't cover a lot of what auto no fault covers. And I still had three pages of questions that I didn't get a chance to ask in the committee. And I'm not comfortable putting forward a solution that's just going to shift costs. That's not a solution for me. We need to make sure that people are protected. I think there's plenty of bloat in the system that we could have addressed before taking away coverage from residents. And overwhelmingly, I represent a district in Oakland County where we had, you know, I think it was 187 calls to 7 of people opposed to this bill as it was written. So, you know, my primary responsibility is to represent my district, and my district overwhelmingly wanted to keep their protection under the no-fault system.
That does not surprise me a whole lot, actually. So here's my main problem was how this was all passed. I mean, we're not even in a lame duck session, but it seemed like this was a lame duck style process, and it didn't need to be that way. Michiganders always say they want transparency, but my problem is that didn't happen here. I'll ask you, do you think most of your colleagues, I mean, on both sides, had a chance to really read every page of that bill?
I mean, there's no way. Anybody who says they did is kidding you. I mean, I read every page of it, but we got the 100-plus page new version the day that we were voting in the special session on Friday. The first version of SB1, I received a copy of at 7 o'clock at night, the night before we had an emergency committee hearing called. We usually meet on Wednesday morning. We were meeting on Tuesday morning at 8:30 in the morning. It's just not time, especially when we are so radically shifting a system that we've had in place for the past 40 years.
Yeah.
I'm somebody, I like doing research. I like testing things. I like iterating. I like it to be community driven. And this wasn't. We had zero hearings with any public testimony. You know, getting into the weeds on process, I know isn't what a lot of constituents want to hear, but it wasn't a good process. And it was really frustrating, especially as a member of the committee, to not have the debate play out in the committee setting, which is what committees are supposed to be about.
And I think this is why a lot of people get angry, and this is why they decided to vote for people like you. They're tired of the status quo. They're tired of how things have been done for many, many years. This is one reason, and I don't know. It baffles me. Sometimes it doesn't seem like some are not getting that message from the voters.
Absolutely. It's been a learning curve for me. You know, I come from various industries where I've had to work with people from all around the world of many different backgrounds. And when we have tough problems, we all get in a room together and we hash it out. So I'm learning really quickly. This is a numbers game. And Democrats are still the minority in the House and the Senate. We didn't have the numbers to really do anything here. And, you know, I am appreciative that the governor was able to get in. We fully anticipated that this bill was just going to get vetoed and would set up 4 years of nothing getting done.
Right.
So I am appreciative. It came a long way from the first version that we saw, but not far enough where I felt comfortable supporting it.
Okay. We're speaking with State Senator Mallory McMorrow here on the Left of Lansing podcast. The next battle, of course, is the budget. And you tweeted something today that caught my eye. You said that Michigan's basically been stuck in the same spending level since 1968, I guess, when you take inflation into account. Is that true?
It is. Yeah. Isn't that staggering?
It is.
So that's something to me, like, you know, we're talking about, we've got to fix the roads. And that was far and away the number one issue that I heard from people during the campaign. Southeast Michigan gets hammered. We're the densest area of the state. 75 is finally being rebuilt effectively right now. But it was completely normal for a freeze-thaw cycle to happen, and then the road just blows up and cars get eaten. So this is far and away the number one issue. It is mind-blowing to me when I saw that presentation, and it was a chart from the Senate Fiscal Agency, and the business leaders of Michigan shared it. They tend to be very conservative when it comes to revenue because they don't want to tax the business and they want to make it a very business-friendly climate. But I think we're at a tipping point, right, where there's nothing left to squeeze. We keep talking about waste and abuse, and there's too much waste in the system. But when you're operating an entire state at the same level of revenue that we had in 1968, it is not surprising that we are where we are right now. And at some point, you know, you don't build a house and then just leave it for decades. You've got to invest in maintenance. You've got to keep it going. And we're at a tipping point right now, and we have to decide to invest in our basic infrastructure.
I like how you put it, too, that you get for what you pay for. And if we're not willing to really try to find new revenue, then, well, we get bad roads, our education system struggles, and on and on and on. All right. Well, we've been talking with State Senator Mallory McMorrow here. One more important question. On October 26th of 2019, does this mean that you'll be cheering for Notre Dame over Michigan?
Oh, my God, yeah. that is not even a question. Listen, I know where I live, but I know where my loyalties lie. I married a Spartan. So even though it's a slightly different game there, but I am very good friends with Jordan Acker, one of U of M's new regents, and we will have a good, healthily competitive day.
Very good. Well, thank you very much for your time. How can your fellow Michiganders find you online?
I am all over the place online. I'm on Twitter at Mallory McMorrow. Our Facebook page, if you just search my name, Mallory McMorrow, it's the first one that comes up, or it's /McMorrow4Michigan. And on the state side, I am at senatedems.com/McMorrow.
All right. Well, Senator McMorrow, thanks a lot for being on. You're a breath of fresh air, and I just want to wish you good luck.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
It's Progressivism with Passion. It's the Left of Lansing podcast, where Pat Johnston shines a light on Michigan's progressive movement. Contact Pat at leftoflansing@gmail.com.
And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information.
Now, back to Pat Johnston.
I really meant that when I said that Senator McMorrow is a breath of fresh air in our state legislature right now. She, like other first-term millennials who won their races last fall, really are bringing a new voice to our politics. They feel the desperation, and unlike previous generations, they're not just going to sit back and do nothing. No, they're going to try to change it now. And rather than sit and wait for their turn, these new leaders are saying their turn is now. Last call time on this edition of the Left of Lansing podcast. A quick shout out to Attorney General Dana Nessel once again. The AG announced this week that she's ready to go to court and shut down the Line 5 oil pipeline that runs through the Straits of Mackinac. She's ready to force Enbridge to close it down if it's unable to come to some sort of an agreement with the state later on this June. Enbridge says that it's ready to invest $500 million to construct a tunnel in the Straits, but Nessel says we cannot wait any longer because that pipeline presents a major environmental hazard to our Great Lakes. Of course it does. Yes, that's common sense. Thank you, Attorney General Dana Nessel. Keep putting the pressure on them. And thanks for taking such a common sense approach to protecting one of the state's most beloved treasures, our Great Lakes. And a shout out to the Grand Rapids City Council and community organizers for proposing a city ordinance that would make it a crime to call 911 on people of color for living their lives. Now, people of color have been confronted by police for living while black throughout the country by white folks lately. There was that Oakland, California incident when a white woman called police because black people were simply having a barbecue in a public park. Oh, my! Well, don't forget about that incident in Grand Rapids in 2017 when police responded to a call from a concerned white resident over the fact that a group of black residents were holding a graduation party at a public park. Again, oh, my! Well, here's an important piece of that story, too. That event was permitted. But that didn't stop some white folks from freaking out, and it meant that police had to be dragged away from their jobs to check out what was happening at the party. I mean, that's just simply wrong. Use your common sense again. Thankfully, the Grand Rapids City Council is using common sense and is considering doing something about it. This proposed city ordinance would make it a crime to call 911 for people of color doing things that white folks do on a regular basis, and it would result in a $500 fine. This proposal has not yet been voted on, and I'll keep you updated, but this would be a huge step in the right direction. It's a common sense direction. And you know what? It would also benefit police as well.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wanderbeats. To hear more, visit wanderbeats.net. That's wanderbeats.net. Now back to Pat Johnston.
All right, that's going to do it here for this week's edition of the Left of Lansing podcast. Sorry for the delay of this week's episode, but I hope it was worth the wait. Special thanks to this week's guest, State Senator Mallory McMorrow. Well, as you heard this week, things are always happening in Lansing that affect our lives. And that is why we always have to stay engaged. That is why we always have to stay involved. Because as I said at the beginning of this podcast, this is where we progressives can put our flag in the ground and say, not here. We are now going to stand up for average Michiganders. If other states aren't going to do it for their people, if national politicians aren't going to do it for their people, well, then we can enact that change here in Michigan. And then we are the ones that people will look to and say, look how Michigan's doing it. Why can't we be more like them? That is what we are trying to do here in Michigan. The progressive movement is live. The progressive movement is strong. The progressive movement is just getting started. As I tell you at the end of each and every Left of Lansing podcast episode, take the battle to them. I'll talk with you next week. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston. Just kidding, this thing isn't researched. And broadcasted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance provided by the wonderful Dr. Heather. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information and Pat's musical taste, if you can handle it. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.